time for the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk on MSO New Sports, bringing you the latest in high school sports news from the Merrimack Valley in southern New Hampshire. The Sports Desk is produced by Kelly Media and brought to you by Moynihan Lumber and Cranny Self Storage in Danvers. And now your hosts, Dom DeCastro and Nick Kukuru.
Merrimack Valley Sports Desk, Dom DeCastro, Nick Kukuru, team of Nick and Nick, August 17th, 2023 show on MSO. newsports.com. What's up, Nick?
Not much. What's happening?
Not much. Chasing headlines in the valley.
Exactly.
What's going on?
The calm before the storm.
That's it. We're getting ready. This is the week it all begins. High school football is the first to go, right?
Yes. Friday the 18th, the day after this airs.
Absolutely. So we're looking forward to that. Last season, you're looking at great seasons from who do we have? Central Catholic had the usual good little run there in Division One. Drakett, I think it was, I think it was Methuen, right, that came along.
Methuen pulled off a big upset.
Yeah.
I'll say they beat Everett, maybe?
Franklin, too. I think they beat the number one seed.
Franklin, that's who it was, yes.
Yeah, and then they ran into a buzzsaw the next game. Was it Central? I'm not sure. That's right, Nick. They lost to a Central team, not the Central we know and love in the Merrimack Valley, but Springfield Central.
Springfield, baby.
Yeah, that was a number 8 seed Methuen versus number 4 seed Springfield Central. I handed it to them pretty good, 54-14, but a great run, though. Semifinalists, I believe, and they beat the number 1 seed. So great season for Methuen coming back. Mm-hmm. Of course, Chelmsford was very solid last year, as was Billerica. Those two powerhouses in their division, Central Catholic, of course, St. John's Prep ended up winning the whole thing. Third Super Bowl out of 4 years. A lot of people had Springfield Central knocking them off, but the old folks in Danvers, our pals from the North Shore, were very confident going into that. And they just stifled the team that was putting up a 50 spot.
Scoring at will on everybody.
And, did they get any points? They shut them up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the Division One scene. And it's going to be exciting. Merrimack Valley football always is. And, you got to expect Methuen to be competitive again. Central will always be competitive.
Chelmsford.
Anyone
that has Thomas Brown blocking on the offensive line is a team to watch out for.
Absolutely. 100%. So we're excited about Valley football. But before we get into fall talk, we're going to, we're still in August here and we're going a little north, tiny bit north and west, Nashua area to have our Southern New Hampshire report that we do every season.
Yep.
Pretty much what's that now? 4 seasons. We close out each season.
Yeah.
Summer, fall, spring, winter. Yeah. We get Tom King.
Quarterly guest.
Yeah, quarterly guest, exactly. Nashua Telegraph's Tom King. He's going to be talking about all the good things that happened in the summer. There was a Legion team that did really well, winning the state title out of Nashua. There was some good action there in baseball circles, pretty much, except for the semi-pro team there in town in Nashua. They didn't have a great season. He'll tell us about that and give us a little fall preview. So let's shut the books on this opening segment and go right to break. And after that, just bring in Tom King for his usual outstanding, insightful, chock full of insights report from the Granite State.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Professional builders choose Anderson Windows because they are the number one trusted and recommended window and door brand in the United States. Anderson Windows and Patio Doors offer beautiful natural wood interiors, low maintenance exteriors, and outstanding energy efficiency. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Hello, this is Brian Cranny from Cranny Self Storage. If you find yourself in the middle of a move, downsizing, decluttering, getting your garage space back, Cranny Self Storage is here to help. We have climate-controlled and secure storage units of all sizes to fit your budget. Whether it's temporary or permanent, Cranny Self-Storage can help you with all your storage needs. We also have moving supplies and boxes. Cranny Self-Storage is conveniently located in Danvers, right off of 128 on Water Street, next to Sam and Joe's. Let us help you keep your belongings safe and secure. Call Cranny Self-Storage today at 978-777-9193.
Merrimack Valley Sports Desk back at it with our one and only guest, the seasonal guest that we call him, from Southern New Hampshire, Tom King of the Nashua Telegraph. What's up, Tom?
Hey, Dom. How are you?
Good.
Been a busy summer.
Yeah.
It's just about over.
Mm-hmm.
All practices have started.
You know, Tom, it's the seasons. When the seasons end in Southern New Hampshire, it's time for you to come on the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk. So here you are. And what went on? What happened in the hot dog days of summer up in Nashua?
Well, the main thing that we have up here during the summer is the Summer Collegiate Baseball League team, Nashua Silver Knights from the Futures Collegiate Baseball League. And what happened with them wasn't much. they had a tough season on the field, finishing 24-40, and
a lot of baseball. You know,
yeah, it's a long season for these guys. Starts right around May 27th, and the regular season ended a week ago this past Sunday. So that would have been August 8th, August 7th. Mm-hmm. So that's when August 6th. So that was the end of the regular season, but they weren't going to make the playoffs with that record. Top four teams of eight, four of eight make the playoffs. But you know what? With this league, and this is how long it is, Dom, they just ended their championship, their postseason 2 days ago on Sunday. Wow. The 12th or the 13th, because the rain. That was the story of the summer, was the rain. Yeah. It was. It just wreaked havoc with all the schedules of all the, local baseball, summer baseball teams and everything else. The FCBL had, they took, for some reason, and I don't know why, they took the day off after the regular season, where last year they didn't. And then they started the playoffs on Tuesday, very costly, because they had multiple rainouts for the semifinals, best two out of three. And the finals were supposed to be a best two out of three. They ended up having to have a one game championship, and that's it. And that was won by Norwich over Vermont. But Nashua drew. The bad record did not affect Nashua's draw. They drew, I think for them, their best attendance, average attendance ever of over 1,600 a game. So. At home instead, so that's not bad. Now, the one event the weather did not impact, the Northeast American Senior Legion Regionals, mm-hmm. and Nashua won the state championship. Sweet. And was in the regionals and lost in the regional finals by a score of 6-1 to Ellswood, Maine, which was the same team that beat them in the opening game. It's a double elimination tournament. No pool play. It's loser's bracket, winner's bracket, the whole deal. And they lost that first game. And I've covered this tournament before with Nashua in it 4 years ago. And you figure, okay, they'll lose the first game and probably not going to win the second. They're going to play a team from West Hartford. Hartford teams always do well in these tournaments. Mm. West Hartford team had about maybe only 13 players on their roster and just wasn't the same. They lost 5-1 to Nashua. Nashua went on to win four in a row and made it to the final game against Maine, the same team that beat them the first time in a very close 3-1 game that left them feeling they should have won it. And so they thought they were in good shape. But Ellswood swung the bats and put out 10 hits and won the game 6-1. So that was a high. I mean, five straight days up and back to Worcester. So they played at Holy Cross. That was the highlight of the summer. It was not a real big summer season for local baseball. We had another youth team make it in their regional to the regional tournament in the 12-year-old Nashua Cal Ripken team. But they lost, I believe they lost 2 out of 3 in that one, and they were done. Other than that, very quiet summer here, except for the regional and the fact the Silver Knights, a year after winning the championship, had such a tough season was a little disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Tom, I know real early, but you mentioned transition to, the high school season that's coming up very soon. Anybody catching your eye early on?
Well, I mean, practices have already started. Mm-hmm. I've been to just about every team's practice. And right now in Division One, my coverage area teams. I think Nashua North has more talent than I thought they would be coming back. They were a team that went 9-0 last year, but lost in the quarterfinals in the playoffs. The team that everybody is still zooming in on is defending state champion Bedford, which was a lower seed, but had the best high school defense I've ever seen. From what I understand, they're pretty loaded. They're the favorite probably going in. But high school football's on day, let's see, they started practice this past Friday, the 14th. The 11th. So they started on August 11th. So they're into maybe 4 or 5 practices so far.
Can't keep track with the Massachusetts and New Hampshire differences, Nick. I think so. New Hampshire's ahead with starting the season and finishing the season, state championships and all that. But then they're behind with vacation week, right?
Right. That's the way it is. Yep. Yeah, because they want to get their games in, none of this vacation stuff, let Mass take all the time off they want. It's a week behind in terms of when football starts. So the opening games in New Hampshire will be on Labor Day weekend, that Friday the 1st and then the 2nd. Yep. And in fact, there is a shortage of officials in all sports in New Hampshire. I guess it's in crisis mode right now, and especially in football. So they have asked schools and sent out dates to schools where if they would volunteer to move their Friday game to a Thursday night. And for opening weekend, a couple of teams have done that. None in my coverage area. But they have done that. So there'll be some Thursday night football August 31st to start the season.
Is the shortage because of the day of the week? It is
no shortage. The shortage is basically just not enough people want to be officials. They don't. From what
same
I
problem in Mass.
Yes,
the same thing with the Thursday night games.
Yep, and from what I've heard, part of the problem is the refs just don't want to deal with the guff from the fans. They just are tired of it.
I mean, yeah. It's gotten worse. More locally to me, but I saw the umpire get chased off the field by a guy, driving away at an ITL game this weekend.
It does. I mean, there's shortage of umpires, there's shortage of, soccer and everything else. It was so bad. It's gotten so bad in soccer that would have maybe the same refs do the JV game that do the varsity game, and they play the JV game a little earlier, and they have to wait, delay the varsity game until the JV game is done, so the refs can come up and do the game.
Yeah, it's sad to see. Like they have, exit strategies. Like the ADs, Nick and Tom, probably get together with the refs before the game and say, all right, this is how we're going to do it. You're going to change here. When the game ends, we're going to escort you. It's crazy. Like you can no longer go in a parking lot and change your referee shirt in your trunk like they used to do.
Right.
They have to go hide somewhere.
No, exactly. When the umpires at Holman Stadium in Nashville, as soon as the game ends, I look up and they are already beyond the first baseline, walking down to right field to where their cars are parked and where they can change and everything else. They are gone. They just take right off, which is, I guess, the way it should be. You know, referees in football, the same deal. They, you know, head right to the locker room. So, yeah. But, you know, I saw a situation in hockey in the tournament, in the state tournament in high school, where in Division One, Bishop Girton beat Bedford, New Hampshire, in overtime. I believe it was 4-3 or 3-2, but it was a penalty shot called in overtime. Ooh. So that's tough. You know, that's very tough. And unfortunately, the ref's locker in the hallway at the Verizon, or, well, it used to be the Verizon Arena, now it's the Southern New Hampshire Arena in Manchester, the big arena in Manchester where, you know, they see, you know, 8,000-9,000 people. There weren't that many there for this state title game, but it was, but the hallway where the lockers are, locker rooms are, the referee's locker room is right there too.
Yep.
So the Bedford coach was, you know, coaches were walking down the hallway and they were screaming at the refs. Ooh. It got, and it got
into a state title game.
And one of the refs, well, you know, I think one of the, they weren't screaming per se right away. What happened is one of the coaches, I think, made a comment, and one of the referees, not the guys who ref the game, but someone connected with the officials, made a comment back, and then that started.
There you go. Yeah.
And just not a good situation. You've got to keep them far away from those locker rooms. You can't have them where they are, you know?
It's the heat of the moment. You have to, I'm not giving them any justification, but in those heat of the moments, no, many people can't control themselves.
Right.
They don't remember to take a deep breath, wait 24 hours. If you still feel, you know, all that stuff, all the meditation strategy you can possibly forget it. Right. It goes out the window. Right. You're right, Tom. You have to have those somehow built. You have to have them go to China to change if they have to.
You can't have them change where they are. And they, of course, they that's a standard right there. That they don't have any place else, from what I understand. That's where they probably did it for the AHL games when the Manchester Monarchs were there. So, you know, I don't know how that works, but now, guys, I saw, with that in mind, I saw a very interesting call in that Legion tournament that had a direct impact on who played in the finals. Hmm. Nashville was playing Greece, New York, which is a area out in near Rochester. Hmm. And they were up 2-0, and Greece came back in the top of the seventh. They played seven inning games, tied the game at 2. Bottom of the inning, a Nashville kid led off with a walk. And so he's at first base. And there were, you know, routine pickoff, you know, routine throws over to first. And of course, a lot of times at this level, they're usually pretty close plays. Well, the kid sliding back, and the umpire called obstruction on the first baseman in the bottom of the seventh in a tie game. And the runner was awarded second base.
Oof.
And went to third on a ground out and scored on a base hit to win the game. Wow. Direct impact on the game. And the first baseman had a collision with a runner earlier in the game and was checked out for concussion. And so I'm guessing that the umpire must have given him a warning, because the New York manager did not go out and argue the play. He stepped out of the dugout, asked the umpire one thing, and then went right back in. Hmm. No argument, no nothing. At the very least, you would think he would go out and argue and ask the umpires to gather and discuss the call and see, what did you see? What did you see? You know?
Yeah. I wonder what the specific rule is for that. I mean, you can't have both feet in front of the bag or something, or
I don't know. If Federation rule, they give a warning or they do something, but they don't award second, from what I understand. But they don't play by Federation rules in Legion. They play by National League rules. So, you know, I was shocked.
Yeah. You know, I was confused by the block in the plate thing. Like, catchers sometimes they do it. There's no call. Like,
I guess his knee was down, blocking access to the bag. But you know what? In that situation, as an ump, you just call the guy safe. You go over, you talk to the kid, and then let it go. Because you're putting a runner in scoring position in a winner, not a winner take all, but in an elimination game.
Yeah.
And you know, I was stunned. And Nashville, you know, they had their best hitters coming up. They took advantage of it and won the game. I was shocked that there wasn't more of an argument put up.
Yeah. It seems to me
I've never seen it called that way before. I've never seen that kind of call before. I feel like first basemen do stuff like that all the time.
I know. Yeah. You know, I was stunned. Yeah. At first, we were wondering, was there a balk? But no one put their hand up to signal that.
Yeah, and the spirit of the rule should be changed. If that's the case, that obstruction leads to an advancement of a base. I get it when a kid is rounding first and the second baseman is in his way and they collide. I get that. Mm-hmm. You know, give him second base, obviously, but he's returning to first base.
This was a routine pickoff throw, you know. Yeah. It wasn't, you know, awarding the runner second in that situation, I thought was, and it wasn't like, I don't know. I mean, he looked safe anyway, you know, I have to think that the kid was warned about it. I have to.
Maybe it's like a punitive call.
Yeah. I mean, I just think, you know, if you warn him once, but at the same time, that's a tough situation to make a call like that.
Yeah, you know? It's one of those calls where you think the umpire is thinking to himself, I'm getting involved. I'm getting involved in this game.
Right.
You know, I'm making an obscure call.
That's exactly it. That's what everybody thought. There was no outrage from anybody. New York side wasn't screaming about it. I don't think people knew what had happened.
Yeah.
So, but that was an interesting thing. It was as we talk about officials. So,
yeah. All right. Well, Tom, we know you also covered the Pats. Have you been down there in the summer? And I guess the big thing this week is Zeke Elliott. So what are your thoughts there?
Well, I did not make it down to any training camp because of all the baseball, the Legion baseball and everything. That took away my time that I had allotted out to go down there. I usually try to make one or two trips down there. I did cover the preseason game on Thursday night. I was there for that. And, you know, they were having trouble running the ball that night, but that wasn't due to their backs. I thought it was just due to the fact it was a makeshift offensive line because they just don't play any regulars in these games. And their offensive line is hurting anyway. So,
yeah.
But I think everybody thinks, well, first of all, with Elliott, and I was on Sirius Radio last night and they asked me about it. And they said that I'll tell you the same thing I told them. Elliott fills two roles. One, the veteran back to take the place of Damian Harris, who left as a free agent. Two, third down back to take the place of James White, who retired a year ago. All right, because Elliott could catch the football. And he's shown that. I think he's got 12 career TD receptions. So they did not have that last year. They did not have that third down back. They did not have a back who could really pick up the blitz very well. And Harris was hurt a lot, so he didn't play in half the games, or at least, you know, four or five of them. So, you know, they had two good young backs that they drafted, Pierre Strong Jr. and Kevin Harris. And I thought that they liked what they did last year. But I think they felt they needed one more veteran back on that roster. And there weren't a lot in the bargain bin. You know, there weren't a lot out there. So, you know, Elliott, why not take a chance? It's a $4 million deal. You know, with incentives, it'll probably take it up to six. I don't know if he'll reach any of those incentives or not. I don't know exactly what they are, but for a guy who's not going to probably, you know, he ran for over 800 yards last year. I don't think he'll even come close to that this year with the Patriots. Look, you might as well. Now, obviously, the sexy signing would have been Dalvin Cook, right? That would have been the big signing, and the Jets did it. You know, the Jets paid him a lot of money, 8.6. The Patriots weren't going to do that. They weren't going to shell that kind of money for a running back right now. So Elliott fills a dual role, I think. I think they probably feel comfortable with it. We'll see how he performs in camp and in practices and everything else. I think the NFL right now, the way it's geared up, these joint practices, even training camp practices, there's more of an emphasis on what they do in those practices than anything they do in any of these preseason games. So that's one thing. So I mean, Elliott will fill a role. We'll see how he does.
I'm ready. I'm ready for the fall season because I'm just so sick of like the breakdowns of the training camp throws and Mac threw and Tyquan Thornton caught a ball on the sideline.
It really is a little over analytical, and I thought it was that last year until I went down there and saw how disorganized the offensive work was with Mac Jones throwing up his hands in the air.
Jeez.
You know, I'd never seen that in a training camp before. So I got it. So you got to hit with all that analytic stuff. That stuff was one of the few years in camp where it was on the money, where they said this offense isn't good. It's a ridiculous show right now.
So it was an indicator of things to come.
Yeah, so that was an indicator. But this year, I think with all the things that they're doing and everything else, I mean, look, that Billy Cunningham was a big, you know, that's the big star. That's the big talk in camp. He's as bad as raw as can be, but he makes people miss. So he's attractive in that sense. How they're going to use him, I don't know. Will he make the 53 man? I doubt it. I think he's probably going to be put on the practice squad, and that's a gamble too, because somebody could pick him up there off waivers. So, but I think the Patriots will try to hold on to him if they can. He certainly has talent to do some things, but he's more of a street football, like, you know, go out there, go, you know, 10 steps and crisscross and I'll hit you over by that tree type of player. You know, I don't know if he fits the NFL mold or not, but it's, you know, a little bit of excitement in the preseason, and especially in a boring preseason game like the other night. So, but that's it. So up here in high schools, the scrimmages, I haven't started yet. I think a lot of teams are scrimmaging starting next week, this coming weekend, around August 20, around the 19th and 20th, you know, 18th and 19th and 20th, that weekend, that's when they'll be scrimmaging. And then we'll see how things work out there. I usually don't go to any scrimmages. We're going to have in the Telegraph, a special supplement comes out on the weekend of August 27th, with season previews of each team in the area, schedules, last year's results, and a special feature, theme feature on how important are special teams in high school football.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a real good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So no one ever thinks about them at all.
Well, I think every time I interview a high school coach, guys, I always say, who's your kicker and punter? Oh, we don't know yet. We haven't really gotten into that yet. That's, you know, you're four or five days into practice. So
you usually have the soccer kid that transferred over to football and throw him out there for the,
rushes back from the Friday game from his Friday soccer game to get on the field in time for the start of the football game at 7 o'clock. So that's those days. I don't think those in Mass, you can't do that from what I was told. Right.
No. Oh, you can do that in New Hampshire?
Yes, you can do that in New Hampshire.
You play two sports?
Yes, you can. Yep.
Huh. Yep. Interesting. Nick, that would be like a game changer up here. I mean, you know, kids don't have to decide between lacrosse and baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think our track, our winter track male athlete of the year was a basketball player. He was track. He was our winter track athlete of the year, athlete of the season. In winter track, indoor track, he was a jumper and high jump and all that, and he was our male winner, and he also played basketball.
Wow.
And he saw he wasn't a starter, but he saw minutes off the bench. He wasn't a scrub either.
No rules up in this state. I'm learning that fast here.
Live free Tom or die, King.
You know, I've been up here like 18 months or 14, 15 months now, and I'm learning that fast,
die, guys.
I still have car insurance though, because I can't forego that.
Me too. No, but that's the situation here in New Hampshire with all of that. So it's you know, it'll be, it should be an interesting fall. Yeah. Definitely. We've got one of the Mass coaches coaching Bishop Girton now. He's built his career in Massachusetts. Anthony Nalen.
Was he Saugus?
Saugus.
Yeah. Saugus, and Dan had a little, you know, a little issue there at Saugus with a hazing accusation. And after that, I think a lot of that, I think anybody who's checked it out felt it wasn't warranted and hired him, you know, after the fact. Epping in New Hampshire hired him after he sat out that year. When the hazing incident occurred, or alleged hazing incident occurred, Epping hired him the next season, and then Lunenburg hired him, and he coached 3 years there.
Yeah.
He's the head coach of Bishop Girton, and he's, you know, he's a nice guy. I did a feature on him. He's bounced around a lot. He knows that.
Yeah.
But he feels that Girton is probably one of the best schools he'd probably ever get a chance to coach at, so he took it, and feels that eventually his kids who are junior high age will, you know, may be able to come to Girton and he can coach them. And that was also something that was attracted to him. Yeah. So
he had a lot of support from the Saugus players too, by the way. They rallied.
Yes, he did, including from what I understand, the player who they said was Hayes said, I didn't have a problem.
Yeah. I think it was funny. As I was doing reporting, you know, for the Saugus Advertiser at the time, I went to the rally.
Oh, there you go. Right.
Yeah, I went to the rally downtown in Saugus. Yep. And I think, you know how kids are, they just kind of like tell you what's going on. They're like, hey, here's the kid right here if you want to talk to him. Like, oh, they were keeping it quiet. And then I went up to him like, oh, what do you want to say?
What did he tell you?
Like kind of what you were saying, like, no, it wasn't hazing and that kind of thing. So,
yeah exactly. You know, so, but from what I understand, he had an issue with the Board of Education or school board that spring. There was some kind of an issue that they were mad at him for doing something. So he was, so I think this was a quick trigger on their part, due to what had happened months earlier, that they were having some kind of disagreement with him. And I think that spilled over into this, but the interesting thing about this, and I didn't dwell on it. I did a Sunday cover feature on him 2 or 3 weeks ago. The interesting thing, and I didn't go into it too much, and I told him I wouldn't. You know, I just wanted, but I wanted to get the aftermath, how he felt after it, and how he's moved on from it. He said that he definitely questioned whether or not he was, you know, should continue coaching.
Crazy.
You know, and he said he was at a crossroads. He had to make a decision in his mind. And, he took that time off from football that year, you know, did not get into anything. He went to a game or two in the postseason to see some of his old friends coach, things like that. But he was, he was having a, did he want to put his family through something like that again? The whole bit. And he decided, no, I'm a coach. That's what I want to do. And he's thrived in it ever since.
Yeah. So that was a weird season. It was in 2018, and they had just some local guy come in and coach the varsity football team, you know, and he did fine. And he wanted the job after, I believe, and they didn't even give it to him. So it was like a real slap in the face. Like, yeah, just fill in for us.
The interim, right. Exactly. No.
Yeah.
The other thing, guys, well, football started on Friday. On Monday, all the other sports started, and I stopped by the Nashville South boys soccer practice, 2-time defending state champions. And they're out there. They have some key returnees, one of the best players in the state. Their Gatorade player of the year, Sante Somarostro, good midfielder, really kind of guided them to that title last year, back-to-back, 2-time defending champions. And so I talked to the coach, Tom Bell, and I said, "What, you know, the off season." They have captain's practices and they have a lot of things. And you know, the rules are a little less stringent up here as in terms of how much contact you can have. They allow like open gyms and things like that where anybody can go. So they don't classify that as a sport practice. But Bellin said to me, he said, "I run it a little differently." He said, "I let the kids run it. I don't get involved in it." Mm-hmm. They set the times, they set the sites. You know, if they need a field, I can try to get it for them, all that stuff. But he says, I let them do it. And it seems to have worked out. So that'll be interesting to see. The season starts, guys. The season starts a week from this Friday.
Wow.
It starts on August 25th. So how about that?
Quick turnaround.
I know it, huh? So that's good, though. They don't need 3 weeks of practice for soccer. You know,
right.
You really don't. You know, like two or three days of tryouts, then you get your team, and you practice for a week, and then you start. That's how it should be. So anyway, guys, fall is here, so let's enjoy it. Yeah.
All right, Tom King, Nashua Telegraph, chock full of insights as usual. We will be patiently waiting for the New Hampshire fall to play out and revisit with you around Thanksgiving time.
All right, guys.
All right. Looking Have a good one, Tom it. King. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
I'll talk soon. All right, that was Tom King, Nashua Telegraph. On the other side, the top moments of the week in the Merrimack Valley.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning on remodeling your kitchen or just thinking about it, may I suggest that you visit our kitchen cabinet showroom in downtown Beverly. There you will find some 25 kitchens on display, just as they might look in your own home. And you can also talk with our kitchen cabinet sales team, who really do know what they are talking about. That's at Moynihan Lumber, 82 River Street, in downtown Beverly.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Hello, this is Brian Cranny from Cranny Self Storage. If you find yourself in the middle of a move, downsizing, decluttering, getting your garage space back, Cranny Self Storage is here to help. We have climate-controlled and secure storage units of all sizes to fit your budget. Whether it's temporary or permanent, Cranny Self-Storage can help you with all your storage needs. We also have moving supplies and boxes. Cranny Self-Storage is conveniently located in Danvers, right off of 128 on Water Street, next to Sam and Joe's. Let us help you keep your belongings safe and secure. Call Cranny Self-Storage today at 978-777-9193.
Merrimack Valley Sports Desk back at it. Final segment of the show here on MSNewsSports.com. All right. We're going to go to our top moments of the week in the Valley. Nick, let's start with you. What do you got?
Yeah, I'm going to the NFL. Yeah, Andover's E.J. Perry is on his way back to Houston Texans training camp. He signed this week. He's going to be one of four quarterbacks on the Texans roster, so he might have a little bit of an uphill climb here with you know, the second pick of the draft, C.J. Stroud leading the way, and then you got a couple veterans there, Davis Mills and Case Keenum also in there. I mean, Case Keenum's played in the NFC Championship game before. That makes me wonder if the Texans are going to move Davis Mills, because he probably has some value there, only his third year. He played pretty well. He had comparable numbers to Mac Jones as a rookie, but they drafted C.J. Stroud second overall, so he's obviously taking the reins there. But yeah, E.J. Perry back in the mix. Hopefully we'll see him on Saturday when the Texans play the Dolphins. Hopefully we'll see him get some reps.
Awesome. I'm staying at Andover. Why not? Nice.
Yeah, they're making headlines.
Yeah. Maureen Noon, hopefully I pronounced that right. She is the longtime coach for Andover field hockey, and she has called it a career. Only won 427 games, including, oh man, she was five away from winning 400 in Andover because she coached 3 years at Wilmington.
Okay.
Where, you know, she was outstanding there too. 32, 13 and 9 at Wilmington, 395, 57 and 57 at Andover. That's combined 427 wins, 66 losses. Winning percentage, 817. 817.
I've covered, you know, on the North Shore, Manchester, Essex field hockey. And when they were only two divisions in North Sectionals, it was every year, I want to say I covered them 9 times in 10 years. It was Manchester, Essex versus Watertown, followed by Andover versus Acton Boxborough.
Oh, it was like
clockwork. They were always, every year when I'm interviewing, you know, Manchester, Essex and Watertown, there's Andover and Acton Boxborough practicing behind them.
Yeah. And there you go. She won 5 state titles, 2010, 2011, 2017, and then the last 2 field hockey seasons, 21 and 22, each of those years beating Walpole 1-0. Wow. And I think last fall we had the players on, if I'm not mistaken, like the captains, possibly from Andover. Mm-hmm. 5 sectional titles, you were mentioning that, you know, the 2010, 11, 17, 19, 21. There's no sectionals anymore now. Lost in four other sectional titles. Maureen did 08, 14, 15, 18, 16 time.
Merrimack. They've followed us.
Yeah, yeah.
In the game before.
Yeah. 16 time Merrimack Valley Coach of the Year. Eagle Tribune 2022 Sportsman of the Year. Seven state title high school teams overall, including five at Andover. And two as an assistant softball coach at Wilmington. So she even made her mark in the softball field, too. Looks like she was Stoneham High grad, Hall of Fame as a coach, obviously. So, hey, we salute Maureen for a great career. We'll try to get her on the show for sure and talk about her, that distinguished and lovely career. So, all right, this is August 17th show. We got August 24th next week. Nick, maybe we'll poke around and do a little football preview. We're going to get behind, maybe get one of the coaches on. Mm-hmm. Possibly, and now that they'll be at that point a few days into their practices, they'll know everything there is to know about the team.
Yep.
Hard to do previews this time of year because the coach is like, I don't know yet.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, they're feeling things out. I mean, you know, they have an idea. They've had 9 months to kind of think about what where their lineups will go and stuff. But hey, sometimes it's high school. You never know who's coming back sometimes. You know, kids get sidetracked and do different things or go to different schools. So we know Marblehead down on the North Shore was really banking on a Division One level prospect football quarterback, and he went to a different school.
Mm-hmm.
Happens.
Yep.
All right, Merrimack Valley Sports Desk, that's it for us. We will wrap things up, and we will see you back next week. Every week here at MSONewsSports.com, we come out Thursday mornings. See you soon.